Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Podcast on the Brink. Indiana, a 74-57 win on Wednesday night over Penn State, concludes a three-game homestand. And to help me make sense of what we just saw these last three games from the Hoosiers, two wins and a loss sandwiched there in between, Grace Ibarra of Inside the Hall is back with us. Grace, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's a little snowy here in Bloomington, which threw me for a loop. But I mean, it's late January in Indiana, so as long as I stay inside, I'm fine.
Yes. So you had a unique, a unique experience for an IU media school student last Thursday when you got to cover an Indiana win over Purdue in basketball. And I say that because this was the first time as a student at Indiana that you've covered a win for the Hoosiers over Purdue. And I thought you did a really good story kind of leading up to the game. You came up with this idea that you would go and talk to the students who were lined up for hours before the game, standing out there in the freezing cold, and kind of got some insight from different people. And then you tied the game, what actually happened. I thought that really made the story, the fact that they were able to go out and win the game. It kind of showed that the students were rewarded for standing out in the cold and supporting this team unconditionally over these last couple of years. What, I guess, just for you as a student, what did it mean to you to be able to watch Indiana finally beat Purdue? And what was just the whole experience like for, covering the game and seeing an outcome that we really haven't seen now for many years?
It was really just amazing in the sense that it was something I haven't seen all of college. But to me, that game is also a lot more because I grew up a Purdue fan. My dad went to Purdue. So I grew up going to Mackey every single year for whatever game around Christmas time. My dad would take me in. I loved all their teams, and like that was really what got me into sports and into college basketball was watching Purdue and all Matt Painter's teams. So then to come to Indiana and figure out how I'm realigning with my fandom and in the Hoosier State, and to have Purdue consistently beat Indiana once I finally switch over to be an Indiana fan was a little bit brutal. But that game was so cool to me because it was the team that got me to love sports and college basketball in general versus my college team, and to watch a game that incredible that I don't think either of us could have predicted coming down to the way it did was really kind of full circle emotional moment for me. But just as an Indiana student, these students have been through a lot. A class the grade above me just graduated without ever having watched their team go to the tournament. I think the class of 2020 as well. And when you come to a school like Indiana that prides itself on its banners, that's not what you expect to get out of your 4 years of college. And I saw a lot of older Indiana fans maybe more upset that students stormed the court and didn't think that was justified when those are the expectations. But one of the ways I really like to put it in perspective is you have to think about the 4 years of students that are actively in the student section for Indiana and what they have seen these last 4 years. That is a big win. It's maybe not, the Watt Shot program defining win that we saw almost a decade ago, but it was a big deal for all these kids. And what really put that in perspective for me was I was sitting next to Bob Kravitz all game. And he was telling me about how he was a managing editor at the IDS in 81, and he had to edit those stories, and he couldn't really celebrate because he was busy doing work, and like that was what was the big deal to those students. And I was like, this isn't my 81, but like these students here today care about this game kind of in a similar way because they haven't had something like that. So I think it was good to talk to someone with like a different perspective on Indiana basketball than what I had in college, and see how it's changed. But yeah, I mean, I think they were, in my opinion, they were totally justified in storming that court because they waited outside all day, some people overnight. It's crazy how much people care.
Were you surprised at just the enthusiasm prior to the game? Because, you know, I haven't been going to games this year. You and Tyler have been covering everything for Inside the Hall, but I've been to pretty much every home game going back to 2011, 12, when I first started getting a credential and going to games. And I've seen some, you know, the Kentucky game, you mentioned the watch shot. That was an atmosphere, I think, that's, at least for me and my personal experience covering the team, was unmatched in terms of the atmosphere leading up to it and the atmosphere in the game. But I guess, were you surprised at all at how you mentioned, I think you and Tyler both mentioned to me, like in the aftermath, that your ears were kind of ringing, and just in terms of that, how loud it was. Was that the biggest, or, you know, was that like the loudest and most intense atmosphere that you've been at since you've covered or been going to games as a student or covered the team? And were you surprised at how maybe different it felt than other big games that you've been to before?
Oh, like 100%. It was the best game I've been to at Assembly Hall since I've been here. I got here in 2018. So it doesn't compare. And honestly, going to the Penn State Michigan game after this last week was a little bit like, I felt let down. And that's just a normal Assembly Hall crowd, but it was just so good. And after covering the team in the pandemic too, I was not conditioned to some of these like rowdier crowds, that I forgot about like how loud it could get. And I didn't think about the fact that people would be camping out until I was like, heard some of my friends that were going to the game talk about what time they wanted to get in line for GA. And they said something about like 3. And I was like, why the game is at 7? And then that's when it clicked to me. People are skipping classes to go out and stand in 20 degree weather to make sure that they're not in the balcony for this game. And that's where the idea came from, because I was like, my friends my age, also like myself, haven't seen Indiana beat Purdue, and they wanted to make sure they were close enough, could be there in the middle of all of it. So it was definitely a different atmosphere leading up to it, just like watching people in line. People don't get in line that early ever, for I can guarantee you they didn't do it for Penn State last night.
Right. In terms of the game itself, Indiana obviously gets a big win. I think in terms of its resume, easily its best win of the season. The Ohio State win was obviously a big win, and in more convincing fashion earlier this season. But the Purdue win over a team that has a chance to be a number one seed, and the way that it happened, you know, with Rob Phinisee playing really, in terms of this season, easily his best game in an IU uniform, probably the best game he's ever played at IU, going back to his freshman season when he, you know, made the shot against Butler. That was obviously a big moment. But what were your big takeaways just from that game, like what actually happened on the court? Were you, how surprised were you that Indiana was able to win the game, and the fashion that they were able to win the game with Phinisee playing that way? I don't think that's something that anybody saw coming, especially when you consider that Trayce Jackson-Davis, his impact on the game was so little.
Yeah, that's honestly what's most surprising about the outcome of the game. But I was up at Mackey the Friday before that, and I took my dad to a Purdue game just for fun, old time sake, like I used to with him. And it was Nebraska Purdue, and Nebraska just got like torn up in the opening minutes. And I was sitting there, whatever I was doing, watching it. And Nebraska just kept turning the ball over, and like completely unforced, just panic. And my like main thought in that moment was, the only way Indiana can have a chance at winning this game is if they take care of the ball, because Purdue's just going to keep making them pay for it, like they did for Nebraska when I was watching that in person. And that is what I think is, people talk a lot about Rob Phinisee and his performance, and he helped in X and everything, the way they stepped up, but the way they took care of the ball is what was a real difference maker, in my opinion. They didn't give them those easy buckets, and they made them work for everything that they got. And also just like Travion Williams having one of the worst games of his season was very helpful. I mean, Ivy said he was hurt. He didn't look very hurt to me. I think he 21 points. But yeah, all the pieces just kind of fell right in that game, and they did all the things they had to do, which is why they were able to get it done without Trace for the majority of the game. And I think a lot of that comes down to taking good care of the ball and shots falling, which helps.
Right. So Indiana comes off the Purdue game and heads into Sunday's game against Michigan. And one of my good friends is Dylan Burkhardt of UM Hoops, who I had on the show last week that covers them. And you know, he was kind of saying to me before that Michigan really needed Indiana to win that game against Purdue, because there was the inevitability of a letdown coming off such a big emotional win. And that's exactly what we saw on Sunday in the Michigan game. What, you know, you covered this team last year for the IDS. You've covered, you know, most every game this season for Inside the Hall. How do you explain Indiana going from beating Purdue and having this moment that looks like, well, this team can be in the AP top 25 on Monday if they just take care of business, to coming out against Michigan and completely just falling flat, losing by 18, and Mike Woodson's on the radio with Don Fisher after the game calling it an awful performance? And, you know, it just seemed like, you know, I figured there would be somewhat of a letdown, because that's always kind of the thing that happens in sports. You come off of a big win and, you know, you're riding high. And once that adrenaline wears off a little bit, you do come back down to earth. But Indiana completely no-showed on Sunday. What did you just make of that performance? And what do you think led to them being completely outplayed on Sunday against the Wolverines?
Well, I think the worst part about it was kind of predictable, at least in my opinion, and watching this team and covering this team. And it was something that the guys were aware of. Durr talked about it in his presser the day before the Michigan game and was like, yeah, we're having these conversations and we need to figure out how we're not going to let the same thing that happened after Ohio State happen when they went and lost at Iowa. So it's obvious that everyone sees this, recognizes this problem, and it still happened again. And I can't describe every single reason everything went wrong. I mean, Michigan had an incredible shooting performance, but I think a lot of it has to do with like effort and the way that they carry themselves on the floor. There's just completely different amount of energy they came out with Purdue, and that's like just feeding off of the environment and everything. But I think choosing like what games to care about and not care about, and it speaks a lot to how that translates to their play. And that's not to say that they don't care about a game, but it's hard to care as much about something as you did 3 days ago when you got to storm the court and everything. And Sunday games have always been, I feel like, bad for Indiana. They're just sleepy and the crowd's sleepy. And it always had the makings of a big letdown game. I don't think anybody expected it to be an 18-point letdown, but pretty big letdown. They were doing some things right, but a lot of it just came down to caring about the game and effort and energy.
Our friends at Homefield produce the world's most comfortable premium licensed collegiate apparel out of their headquarters in Indianapolis. Run by IU grads, Homefield studies Indiana's history to come up with the most unique apparel designs available for Hoosier fans anywhere. Our current favorites at Podcast on the Brink are the 1987 National Champs t-shirt commemorating IU's last national championship and the vintage 1965 Indiana University Bison t-shirt. And it's not just Indiana apparel available at Homefield. They're constantly adding new schools to the over 120 currently available at homefieldapparel.com. Podcast on the Brink listeners can save 15% off of your first purchase by using code BRINK15 during checkout at homefieldapparel.com. Where did you come down on the whole discussion in the aftermath of the Michigan game about the starting lineup and whether or not it should change? I've watched enough of Mike Woodson coach his team this year and kind of how he's answered the question over the course of the season. I didn't think there was a chance he was going to change the lineup. And obviously he kind of, when you did the radio show recap on Monday night, he basically, I don't know, I didn't actually hear what he said, but reading the quotes, it sounded like it wasn't something that he was actively thinking about. I'm just curious, did you think that was something that needed to be looked at further after that game, or do you think it's been overblown in terms of a discussion and talking point? Because my whole thing about it is, all right, it's fine to say let's change the starting lineup, but what is the solution that you present that we know is going to be an upgrade? People say, well, Parker Stewart and Miller Kopp both need to be starting, and I'm like, okay, well, who are you putting in? Are you putting in Rob Phinisee, the guy that has basically one game all season where he's played really well offensively, and other than that, he's not played well? Are you putting in Trey Galloway, who in the Iowa game was turnover prone at times and has different things in his game that are weaknesses? It's like, I feel like every time that something bad goes wrong, the rush is to change something, but it didn't necessarily make a ton of sense to me to just jump at the conclusion of changing the lineup for the sake of it.
No, I don't think the starting lineup is the issue. And when something that bad happens, everybody's looking at something to blame. And that was the obvious thing to blame because the starters did not play well, but the bench didn't play well either. So it wasn't the most valid argument. What I would say, though, is I don't think he necessarily needs to go to the same starters to start the second half if someone's playing particularly well. Like I would have argued start Phinisee second half Purdue. I forget exactly what it was, but they went on a little bit of Purdue knockdown. Ivy knocked down some shots from outside, and he was playing pretty well defensively that game and gave them a lot more energy on defense. So I would argue, do that instead. I think you can be more flexible going into the second half, but like you said, what are you going to do with the people not liking Miller and Parker in there together? They don't have the options to change it really.
Yeah, I mean, they, with the Purdue game in particular, I think there was, it would have been a discussion after that game if they wouldn't have won the game, because if you look at how they started that game, I think they went down 16-8, and then they were up by 9 at halftime, and I think people felt like the bench was the reason they got back into the game. It was the bench to an extent, but it was also Rob Phinisee just went nuts and hit a bunch of shots, and the crowd got into it, and Purdue didn't play particularly well. But then the second half, it was like he put the starters back in, and again, the energy waned, and Purdue, got right back into the game. So I think that's like a lot of where the discussion came from originally. But since Indiana won the game, that people weren't going to start talking about that. So then they pounce on it after the Michigan game. So last night against Penn State, he doesn't change the starting lineup, and we see a 15-2 start to the game. By the time there was the first media timeout, the game was basically over at that point. Indiana completely flipped the script from the Michigan game. Was it just energy? Was it just they were making shots? Was it a combination of both? I mean, what did you see different last night from Indiana that you didn't see against Michigan in the first half in particular?
Well, one, I think, through their first 10 or 12 points, they were shooting 100%, like from everywhere, which we know is not typical of Indiana, but it's so easy to get off to a great start when you can't miss and when you're getting good shots too. But I think the way X was commanding the floor really changed the tone last night than what it was Michigan. And he had a good game against Michigan. He was one of the better players against Michigan, and he's had several good games together, but they were just a lot faster and there was a lot more energy. They were pushing things in transition. They were getting Penn State to turn the ball over really easily and capitalizing off of that instead of dribbling a hole into the ground. They were taking it right to the bucket. So you talk about that energy. I think that was a little bit more amplified there. 8:30 PM tip, 8:40, whatever it ended up being, is also a better time for a game, in my opinion, than a 3:30. You're going to get a lot more, season ticket holders, older fans that are going to sit the whole game for a Sunday afternoon game versus, you know, your 9 p.m. tip. You're going to have students there ready to go.
I also thought that against Penn State, the one thing you have to do, because they play such a slow tempo and they thrive on making the game ugly. And I think I've told you this before. I think Micah Shrewsbury's going to be a fantastic coach. I mean, the experience that he has working with Brad Stevens, working with Matt Painter, he's been in the NBA. He's been at the highest levels of college basketball at Butler and Purdue. I think he's going to be a really good coach at Penn State. I don't know that he'll get the program into the top four or five consistently of the Big Ten, because it's just such a hard place to win and it's so hard to get players there. But with this particular team, I think one thing he's done that's pretty smart, you know, he's recruited all these guys that are from lower levels, kind of out of necessity from the transfer portal, taking some chances. Some guys have worked out. He got a decent amount of guys to come back, but it's not the most talented team. So rather than trying to run up and down and outscore teams, you know, he's come up with this system in his first year as a head coach. We'll see how it continues as he goes along, where he's just going to try to, you know, run as much time on the shot clock. He's going to make you grind out possessions. And in the game at State College, if you watched it closely, Indiana got pretty frustrated with that style play, having to slow down. So I thought last night going into the game, Indiana had to get off to a really good start to kind of take that away from Penn State, because they were going to thrive off of, you know, keeping this game low scoring. Penn State wanted the game to be in the high 50s. They ended up scoring 57, but Indiana scored 74. So I thought that was a big deal in the game as well. Looking forward now, you know, it's kind of a, I don't want to say a lull in the schedule, but Saturday afternoon, Indiana's going to Maryland. Maryland all of a sudden looks like a pretty decent team. They looked like, after the Michigan game where they went to Ann Arbor, that they were going to kind of throw in the towel. They're obviously playing for an interim coach under Danny Manning, but now they've won a couple games in a row, including I think they beat Illinois at home, and then they beat Rutgers, which is not an easy team to beat. They've been up and down, but now Indiana goes to College Park. It's a place they haven't won since Maryland joined the Big Ten. What do you expect to see out of Indiana this weekend against Maryland? This is a team that's won one road game in conference play. They beat Nebraska. But it's important, I think, that they figure out a way to get a couple more road wins. And looking at the KenPom numbers, where Maryland's ranked their 80th, this is the second most winnable road game Indiana has left on the schedule. So to me, it's looking pretty important for them to come out and play well.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. You cannot drop this road game when you have ones that are tougher left on the schedule still. And streaks in the Big Ten are hard to break, as we saw with Purdue. That Michigan streak, we didn't talk about it, but it still exists. It's been, what, since 2016, since Indiana last beat Michigan? We saw the issues at Wisconsin. That's a streak older than I've been alive. And not to say that they don't have a shot at beating Maryland. They're a better team than Maryland. But sometimes when those things just like pile up, it's really hard to break them. And they have not proven that they can finish and close out games on the road yet. So what they need to do is to not let this get tight and not let it come down to the last 5 minutes, the last final possessions, because I don't think they're capable of doing that in a setting in which they don't have the backing of their fans, and they get frustrated really easily. So like you said, if we can see some more of that faster start from them, where they can get out and get confident and push the ball in transition, like they've shown they can be really effective, that'll be really good. But it's a game that they can't drop, whether you said being the second most winnable, and it's something they need under their belt to prove that they can win on the road for the rest of the season. Because as much as the Nebraska win was good to get that first road win out of the way, I don't think it really showed that they can put one away on the road. Nebraska, I don't know how many shots did they miss down the stretch. They were practically handing them the win, and they just couldn't get anything to go in the basket.
Right, exactly. I mean,
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You look at the remaining road games. Here they are. They're Maryland. Then they're at Northwestern, which Northwestern, say what you want about them, but they just went on the road last night against Michigan and took them down to the wire. I think the game, it didn't go to overtime, or I don't remember. I was watching the end of it. It was a close game down the stretch, and they won at Michigan State. So Northwestern is not going to be an easy game. So Maryland, Northwestern, Michigan State on the road, Ohio State on the road in a game that Ohio State's going to be looking for revenge for the earlier matchup. Yep. And then they've also got Minnesota on the road, which Minnesota, who knows how they'll look at that point in the season, and then Purdue, which that's another game that really looks like it's going to be an uphill battle. So looking at this realistically, I mean, Maryland, Northwestern, and Minnesota are the ones that you say you probably need to get one or two of those if you want to finish above 500 in the Big Ten. I mean, what confidence level do you have that Indiana is going to be able to figure this out and get a couple more road wins? Are they going to have to win out at home in order to have the necessary Big Ten wins to get back to the tournament?
The same thing that happened after Purdue. Not that this was a big win last night, but it was a blowout, and it's the first blowout that they've had against a Big Ten team like that. So there's that level of confidence coming off of it, but they cannot, like, they need to forget about it. After tomorrow, after today, move on. It's Maryland. Focus on that and not let your confidence in how well they put away Penn State, specifically in the first half of that game, carry into Saturday, because you can't go into it cocky, or Sunday, whatever day it is this weekend.
Saturday.
Okay, thank you. I second guess myself there with the Sunday. Maybe they'll play Saturday. But yeah, I think to avoid being that kind of roller coaster team that we've seen Indiana be in the past, very up and down with wins and coming off of them, I think the best thing they can do is just forget about Penn State and focus on Maryland.
What do you think the solution is going to be at point guard if Rob Phinisee's out for an extended period of time? Or, you know, it was interesting to me last night for the first time that Mike Woodson talked about Christian Lander being unavailable, which I asked you and Tyler before the game last night how he looked during warmups, and it seemed like things were normal. I know there was a couple of games ago where he didn't dress or wasn't in uniform. But he's been in uniform the last couple of games. He hasn't played since the Northern Kentucky game, I think, on December 22nd. So it's been quite a while now. What's the solution for the backup point guard minutes if Phinisee can't go and Lander remains out? Is this a situation where you're going to have to play Xavier Johnson 35 minutes a game and then try to buy some time with Trey Galloway at the point? Or how do you see this working out?
Yeah, I don't think playing X 35 minutes is probably the best solution, because he's best when he's explosive and has energy, and he needs that guy like Rob to come in and take over so he come out and do some of the incredible things we've seen him do the last three games. I do think Trey Galloway will probably end up being the answer if Rob is out a little bit more long term here. I don't know what that's going to look like but we know it's not going to be Lander. And I didn't hear anything until yesterday about Lander being injured, and I got no inkling. I know we haven't received anything about it, and I feel like when Galloway was injured, we got emails. So it's all very a strange situation. And he looks fine to me when he's warming up, but again, he hasn't played in so long, so that's just not going to be an option at all.
You watched him last season play some for Indiana. Did you think going into this year that he would take a step forward and have a bigger role, or are you not at all surprised that he's basically been a non-factor for this team?
I think it really depended on who Woodson was going to bring in, but after seeing who he has, I'm not surprised. He, to me, last season just looked super inexperienced at this level and was still playing like he was in high school, but he was so young and he's still so young. And I mean, I played basketball in high school, and my senior year was important for my development. I was not great in any way, but just what you learn in that last year is so important. And to jump from that, not only into college, but into a very weird season with the pandemic and not playing as many games, and everything's just not very normal. I don't think he had a really great transition, and lost out on a lot of development. And I don't think I've seen him, he's improved, but I don't think I've seen him improve a ton in terms of like maturity and confidence on the floor. And that's where I could see Woodson just not wanting to play him for that reason.
What do you think the biggest difference between this team, just watching them play this year versus last year? You know, obviously last year there was trouble closing out games, and the way they finished the season ultimately led to the dismissal of Archie Miller. But a lot of the key pieces from last season did come back, and there's a lot of, you know, they did, you know, get Xavier Johnson, which was a big deal, and Miller Kopp and Parker Stewart. But, you know, their two best players were on last year's team, and a lot of the other contributors are holdovers. I think Woodson obviously has this team playing a little bit better, but just in terms of what you've seen from a body language perspective, energy wise, how this team seems to interact with one another on the floor, is there a major difference in your mind from last year to this year?
Yes, attitude, so much. Yet, like last year, it always surprised me because there was no one there in the stands. So I would just watch these teams run out into an empty stadium, both Indiana and whoever was the opposing team visiting. And Indiana would always just run out like calmly, didn't really have any energy, like didn't look like they were super happy to be there. And then whoever they were playing against, like 9 times out of 10, like ran out screaming, trying to create their own energy and looked like they were enjoying themselves. And I think in a setting in which you don't have the fans and the energy there, you get a lot more insight into how people actually are acting. And I'm just now remembering this, but I remember it was so weird to watch other teams look like they were having fun when I never saw Indiana have fun. And as silly as that sounds, that seems to be the difference in them clicking better this year, because they do have a lot of those same pieces. Like Race and Trace are always like smiling, just having a good time with each other. And that translates to them having really good chemistry on the floor, both on the offensive and defensive ends of things. And Trace has tweeted about it all the time over the summer, was like having fun. And they seem to all be like really good friends. For the most part, that stuff helps, because it helps with communication. It helps with enjoying doing what you're doing. And Woodson really seems to care about all of them. And like we saw him rip into Geronimo last night a little bit, but he's not doing that if he doesn't want the best for his players. And it's cool to see that sort of emotion, whether it's positive or negative, but just an indication that people care about this game and care about their team.
Do you think that the change, the coach, because you're on campus and you have friends that go to games and you're around other students, I'm just curious, like how would you describe like the morale on campus and among students like towards IU basketball this season compared to last?
Oh, way happier. I mean, even if we're talking about this team maybe being a bubble team, maybe being a higher seed in the tournament, people don't care. Like, they love Woodson. And as much as I think the whole suit thing is annoying, I think it's been really cool to see the students band together in a way I haven't seen the last 3 years, and care about the coach and care about the players. And whenever I see one of them out, like a player or just walking around, students will always like stop and say hi or like tell them I'm like good game. And they're always just like really happy to interact with people. And I've seen Woodson out so much. I never, ever, ever in my 4 years, 3 years that he was here, saw Archie Miller out, except for this one time he was giving a campus tour to who I forget who, but he was in the media school. And I was like, what is Archie doing here while I'm in class? But it's just cool the way that they've embraced the community. I know that was one of Woodson's goals when he first came in, was to get back into the community and get back into high-fiving fans and signing autographs. And he's been really intentional about doing that.
Grace, thank you for the time today. Thanks for coming on the show. I think it was really good to get your insight based on just, you know, you've been in student media for a long time, and you covered the team last year, and you've been doing a great job. I try to tell you as much as possible in our Slack conversations. I've been really impressed with the job that you've done this season for Inside the Hall. It's been a lot of fun working with you, even remotely. It's been a real pleasure, and I know you're going to go on to do great things when you get out into the real world. And we still got a couple more months of basketball here together, so it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll try to have you back on the show later down the stretch. Maybe get you and Tyler, and we can do the three of us talking about things here later in the Big Ten season. But thanks for the time today. We really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
And everybody, we'll be back again next week with another episode. We'll have, obviously, the Maryland game to break down, and with no games next week, during the week, we'll have an episode probably midweek. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, if you enjoy the show, please leave us a rating or review on iTunes or Spotify, and we'll be back again next week with another episode of Podcast on the Brink.